Good evening, everyone. The Senate E-12 Policy Committee will come to order again. We have before us Senate File 3189. We'll continue to entertain amendments. And we'd also like to give a special welcome to Marin. Welcome, Marin. Okay. First committee meeting.
Okay.
We will proceed first by entertaining technical amendments or what you deem non-controversial. And is there anyone that has an amendment in that category?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stumpf. excuse me, we're going to have to reduce the noise? Okay. Except, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. In the discussions with chair of the Finance Committee, there are three sections that I would like to move to, or I would like to have deleted from the proposal, and that would eliminate the possibility or the need for the proposal to go to the Finance Committee, and we can send it straight to the floor. And if members are listening, Article 1, Section 6. Article 1, Section 6.
Page 6.
On page 6.
Oh, sorry.
And members, I believe the individual authors of those provisions have been contacted, and that we would try to find a home somehow for these provisions in another bill, another vehicle. The second one is Article.
Senator Stumpf, should we do them one at a time?
Sure.
Senator Stumpf moves to delete Article 1, Section 6. Further discussion.
This provision is one that I would. I know for sure, because I have two bills in the Tax Committee that we can add that to one of those bills. So.
Okay. Further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Prevails.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the second one is Article 4, Section 3. And that's on page 37. And this is a provision I believe Senator Saltzman brought to the committee. It doesn't increase spending or anything, but this we also have been flagged by the finance chair. And so what we'll try to do is to put that in a different bill that will go to the finance committee.
Senator Stumpf moves Article 4, Section 3 be deleted. Further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion fails. Senator Stumpf.
And the final one is Article 4, Section 4, which is on next page, page 38. And, Mr. Chair and members, this is the change in payments of aids and credits. I believe this was pretty much the governor's language with some modest changes that we made to it. And I think we also have another vehicle that we can use to put that, add that to.
Senator Stumpf moves to delete section, Article 5, Section 4. Article 4, correct. Section 4. Further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Prevails. And again, the understanding for those three that we deleted, there will be another vehicle, that's the intent for their continued viability. Is there non-controversial technical amendments before we go further? Senator Dahl?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I don't know that there's a written amendment, but it's a one-word addition. If we go to page 48, line 48-2, and I would just like to add one word.
Senator Dahl, could you repeat page 48?
Yep, 48.2, and I want to, this particular section addresses pre-kindergarten for elementary teachers. And as we look at this addition here, we are going to... the rules under this paragraph also must require general ed candidates for initial license to teach pre-kindergarten elementary students to pass as part of the examination of licensure-specific teaching skills, test items assessment, the candidate's knowledge, skill, and ability in mathematics. I would like to add the word instruction after mathematics, so it would be mathematics instruction. I don't think a pre-kindergarten teacher, elementary teacher, needs to know calculus, so we don't need to test their knowledge of math, but we should test their knowledge of mathematics instruction.
Okay, Senator Dahl, Council, Ms. Yonker has given me an A15 okay. amendment, which would accomplish that.
Thank you.
It's being distributed. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dahl, I believe part of the intent behind that is in keeping with that we want all of our teachers to be able to have pass the basic skills in those basic subject areas. So I'm wondering if we could get some opinion of the department. If we did that, would that still make certain that regardless of what grade they were teaching, they'd still have to at least pass the eighth grade subject basic skills test?
Okay. Senator Dahl, and then the commissioner is here to address that question.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's already addressed in line 4729. We are asking them to pass as part of the examination licensure-specific skills. So, again, I'm really just clarifying something that's already written in the paragraph ahead.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and members, this specific language is talking about as a candidate is in a preparation program, they are specifically going to be looking at not only teaching skills but also looking at the content knowledge that they have in mathematics. So it's candidate's knowledge, skill, and ability in mathematics. And so they want to make sure that that there's also that content. The idea behind this was as our standards are changing and are getting more robust, many times our elementary teachers are really strong in the reading area but not necessarily in the mathematics area. And so the direction to the Board of Teaching is to try to also look at the beefing up, if you will, of the content and teaching of mathematics. It's not only the instruction, but it's also the content knowledge to make sure that they have both of those.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, I believe that's addressed before, assessing the candidate's knowledge, skill, and ability in mathematics. Again, we're talking about preschool and elementary. If someone tested me on mathematics, they would kick me out of every job I ever had. But I do believe we should know their ability in mathematics instruction. So I think what your intent is well covered in the rest of this particular section. I'm just I'm worried it's a little too broad in terms of what we're trying to ask our elementary teachers to focus on.
Yeah, but knowledge and instruction is different.
Commissioner Segrin, for the reflection.
Mr. Chair and members, candidates' knowledge is one thing, but if you modify that with mathematics instruction, that's all only about the instruction of mathematics. It's not about the knowledge of mathematics. I understand what you're trying to do, Senator Dahl, but we want to make it clear that they have good, strong content knowledge and that also certainly they want to have the ability to instruct in mathematics and have that. But they, you know, we want to make sure that there are both. So that's just, you know, maybe it's a matter of clarifying, you know, what you want to say. I certainly understand that, you know, it's important to know how to instruct in mathematics, but they also need to have, a knowledge of mathematics, too.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I think instead of just adding the word instruction, maybe we need to say ability in mathematics and mathematics instruction. And then you cover both. Or if you want to say instruction of mathematics, to vary it a little bit. But I think if both of them are what is intended, make it clear.
Senator Dahl, he'll ponder that with additional comments. Senator Roebling, Saltzman, Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Hann.
And I kind of understand what Senator Dahl's getting at, because on 47.5 and 47.6, it does say they have to pass the skills examination in reading, writing, and mathematics. And so is this a different exam, or how will we actually test their mathematic skills? But I don't know how we test their skills in mathematics instructions either. But I guess I'm trying to understand how we would do this on a practical level.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Commissioner.
Senator Roebling. Currently, I probably should have Ms. Ballmer come up here and talk about what the Board of Teaching is doing. We are creating new skills tests for the preparation candidate, and we want to make sure that each of the areas in mathematics and reading, et cetera, are covered thoroughly and are assessed. Right now, the test allows somebody to pass and actually not fail the mathematics or fail the reading, and they could pass the whole test. So what we are trying to do is make sure that each of those areas is thoroughly covered, and then we're also saying that because our standards are changing so much, we also want to instruct the Board of Teaching to make sure that in the preparation of teachers, that in addition to the reading, which we actually covered very strongly last year with Senator Salzman and Senator Olson, and we also feel like the mathematics area, especially in the elementary area, needs to be beefed up and for the expectation, because we're going to be doing a lot more in the mathematics area in the elementary and middle schools. And so that's why we're doing this.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir Stone.
You know, I think Senator Dahl is probably, if you look on 47.27 through 47.32, the rules shall be effective by, the rules under this paragraph also must require candidates for initial licensures. Initial licensure. Would this be the same thing, right?
Yeah.
To teach pre-kindergarten or elementary students to pass as part of their examination of licensure-specific teaching skills. So if it was in the area, it would seem like that would pick it up. Test items assessing the candidate's knowledge, skill, and ability in comprehensive, scientifically-based reading instruction. So I think, there's a lot of language there that would seem to cover all the bases, but.
Sir Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I thought it was a technical amendment. Sorry to drag this out a little bit, but I agree with Senator Stump that I think it's well covered in other areas. I think it's simple enough.
Okay, it hasn't been formally introduced, and we'll continue.
I agree with his amendment as it is. I think that if you read that whole paragraph, that word, because the knowledge of math is covered earlier in a different paragraph. This is the paragraph that links the math instruction with the reading instruction.
Any other technical or maybe non-controversial amendments at this point?
Have we finished with this amendment?
Yeah, he withdrew.
Oh, are you withdrew?
No, I didn't withdraw.
No.
No, I wanted it added.
Oh, okay. So how would you have it worded?
I'm just standing by my original position is all I wanted to reiterate, Mr.
Sure.
Chair. So I want to move the amendment.
Okay. And then Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, or maybe Ms. Ballmer, when we are talking about mathematics knowledge, for those of us who don't know, are we talking about proficiency at the level of Algebra 1, Algebra 2? What are we talking about for this section?
Chalmers. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Karen Balmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Senator Rummel, this section is relating to, as you can see on 47.25, all teacher candidates are required to pass, in addition to the basic skills, two other tests. And that's what this section addresses, a test in general pedagogical knowledge. And that would be the things of working with diverse learners, assessments, those dispositional pieces, all kinds of things relating to instruction and assessment. And then there's a content-specific test also required. Those the way that we get those test items, we go back to the licensure standards. And so there's a host of math standards that are specific to early childhood teachers and specific to elementary teachers. Those are the test items that we're talking that are being referred to in this section. So when it's talking about licensure-specific teaching skills, in for elementary and early childhood teachers, those test items for their knowledge, skill, and ability in math. So it would be, it is the math instruction piece, but the instructional component generally is covered in the pedagogy test. And then what's covered in the content test, referred to in the new language here, is very math-specific content for an elementary or an early childhood teacher. Now, when we the way we've done that for the reading language that was that you see just prior to the proposed language here is we are in a test construction phase, and we actually have one sub-test out of three that is reading language arts so that we can make sure that our candidates pass that sub-test specific to the reading items before they are issued a license. So that, I believe, is what's also being proposed here, that similarly those math content standards would be sufficient enough within that content test so that we could get a sub-score and make sure that they had passed them before getting a license.
Sir Hinn.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Palmer, I'm trying to understand your testimony. So are you saying that the amendment that Senator Dahl has should not be accepted because as he's trying to change, I guess, the meaning of the sentence on page 48.2. Are you saying that we should retain the language as it is written or accept Senator Dahl's amendment?
Mr. Chairman?
Sir, Stone.
Maybe I can help. If Senator Dahl would be amenable, after the on line 48.2, after candidates, if we would insert content and then add the instructions as Senator Dahl had proposed after mathematics. That way the sentence would, or that last part of the sentence would test items assessing the candidate's content knowledge, skill, and ability in mathematics instruction. Work?
That would work.
Ms. Balmer, you thought that was helpful?
Mr. Chair, yes, I think that that's fine. We the test will be constructed on the basis of the standards that we have. Now, one of the other things we want to do a better job of is aligning our teacher prep standards to our K-12 standards so that our teachers are prepared to deliver the right content. But I think that at the end of the day, we want them to deliver that content and be prepared to deliver it instructionally in an instructionally sound manner. So I think that that's fine.
Senator Dahl, you have a suggestion from Senator Stumpf. Your reaction?
Mr. Chair, everyone seems to be happy with that. I'm not sure I am, but I'd rather move on to other things.
Okay.
So I will accept that.
Okay, that's a friendly amendment. And so we have the A15 with on line 48.2, we insert after candidates' content, and then before the period after mathematics, we insert instruction. Is that your intent, Senator Dahl? And he so moves the A15 amendment as noted. Further discussion? If not, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Any other technical or non-controversial amendment, we hope? Senator Fobey.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't think this one will be controversial, but then again, I'm kind of new at this still, and everything has ended up being controversial. So back to my A22 amendment, I'd like to add an oral amendment to that. This is having to do with the Minnesota Teacher Appraisal System, Article 6, A22. Section 23.
Excuse me, the A22?
Yes.
We're going to have to retrieve that.
Okay. It was from a few hours back, page 68.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, if you'll refer to that.
Okay, page 68.
And council can suggest how we do this. I'm not exactly sure. But I was wanting to add language to allow the President of Education Minnesota or its designee as part of these task forces for these appraisal systems. On page 68, the principal and superintendent and the teacher appraisal system.
Ms. Zucker, did you hear the question? Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, then I was just first at, double check here. Perhaps at 68.1 after line one, insert the President of Education of Minnesota or their designee. And then, and we'd have to renumber it. So then also the same language could be I would go with, well, we'd have to move the and, but on 68, after line 28, then say the President of Education Minnesota or their designee, or the President's designee.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson?
Well, Mr. Chairman, then when we're starting to introduce organizations, I think we've already got teachers on, four of them in the teacher one, and one licensed teacher in the principal one, along with one elementary, one secondary principal. I think we're going down a path that it's not necessary to do.
Senator Bonoff, you had your hand.
Well, yeah. Mr. Chair, similar to what Senator Olson said, the reason why, Senator Fobey, I really liked your Minnesota School Board amendment is because we had inadvertently left off a voice for the Minnesota School Boards Association, and that seemed important that we reinsert that in terms of leaving a voice off of the teachers, which they are representing. They are part of Education Minnesota. I think they're adequately represented because we have four of them.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Fobey, do you see a need for the amendment?
Actually, I feel real strongly with the MSBA representative. So with those comments and, yes, looking at this closer, I'll withdraw my amendment.
Thank you. You want to comment on the withdrawal?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think perhaps we could make consistent by not necessarily a representative of the association, but having a school board member. I mean, that would be consistent with the form that we've had here. We have a teacher. We have a principal. I have a school board member. I mean, it's accomplishing the same thing, what you're saying.
Could that be a charter school or any school board? But
well, if consistently rather than starting down the path of having each organization represented.
Okay.
But that's – just take it with a grain
Senator,
of salt if you don't care to do anything with it.
Bobby did want to withdraw. We could entertain an amendment if we need. Senator Saltzman, would you like to add further advice?
Well, on the same point, Mr. Chair, I have the A31 amendment, so, since we're having this discussion.
Yes.
That would
would you like that distributed?
Yes, please, because
okay.
Then you'll
distribute
have
the A31 amendment.
Is that when these task groups are coming together, because I understand that who would be appointing, who are the teachers, who is the principal, who is the superintendent, that a suggestion that the president of the Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association or the president's designee represent this group. And the same with the secondary principals, the same with the Association of School Administrators. And I put this on the table as perhaps a suggestion that by these groups being able to appoint at least one of the people from their organization, we might have better buy-in. So perhaps with the teachers, one of whom is the president of Education Minnesota or the president's designee, and three other teachers that could be appointed by the commissioner. So I just put that on the table as a way, because we put some things on the table that are bold, and perhaps to have better buy-in, to have these groups feel that they have their representative at the table. So I will leave that to the committee to discuss, but this would be building on what we've done already. So I just put that forward as a suggestion that, and this also adds some other language on page 67 regarding the appraisal system that is put together for the principals and school superintendents.
Senator Stone.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm just trying to incorporate the amendment. Do we run? Let's see. I guess the question that runs through my mind is what Senator Olson just mentioned before on the other. We want good representation on these task forces because they will be the ones to develop the appraisal system. But I think it probably would be wise not to get into naming individual organizations, but rather the kinds of broad representation that we want on there.
Okay. Mr. Kite, would you like to?
Charlie Kite, I'm the executive, I think who I was for a minute, executive director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. When you have this language appointing these various groups, you identify a person, like a school superintendent, a principal, a teacher. You have nothing in the language that really says who appoints. Is it the commissioner? Is it the ed chair? And so one of the things that you can do by having an association that represents that group appoint their person or a designee, you can make sure that you get a person who in fact will serve, in fact is knowledgeable, and is at the right point in their career. You probably don't want to appoint somebody who's a brand new person in that job or somebody that's just retiring. You want to have somebody that could put that effort in. So I think that's the reason for the effort to have the various associations have at least some say of who comes to the table and then represents that group of educators well. Thank you.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kite, all of those people are appointed by the Commissioner of Education currently within the bill. So you had said there wasn't anyone appointing. We did put that in. We said that, number one, there had to be a geographic balance, and the commissioner was responsible for those appointments. I don't mind. It's up to you, the will of the group, if you want to change that, but it is supposed to. By way of the language, the commissioner was the appointing authority.
Senator Bonhoff and the committee members, it is our opinion that you will have a stronger committee functioning better if you have the professional associations help to bring the right people forward.
Senator Phoebe?
Mr. Chair and members, I still just want to to the point of the School Boards Association being involved, that they aren't reflected on this list, and I think part of their responsibility is for the local governing body for the teachers in the district. So I feel strongly about whether we decide to go with all the groups being represented as designating people. I believe the School Boards Association needs to be reflected somewhere in here.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson, then we're going to ask Senator Stump how he'd like to approach this for consistency.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Phoebe, we did pass the school board one in there. I think my only point in this is that we should have some consistency. If we're going to have organization and the designee, then do that consistently for all of the groups, or if we're just going to designate that role be represented under the commissioner appointee, then just be consistent. So I think it's debatable, but I don't think anybody's suggesting that the school board, that a school board member or the school board association designee should not be in there.
Okay, Senator Stump, as was noted, earlier this afternoon we included MSBA on Senator Phoebe's amendment, and we've have additional suggestions. You did indicate earlier that we may not want to list organizations, but further thoughts?
Well, I think we do walk down a path. If we put one organization in, then we probably are going to end up having to put all of the organizations in, which may not be bad. I'm not saying that it's bad at all. I'm just saying that the route that we took in the bill was to try to get a broad representation of those involved in the educational endeavor. And so I, you know, and yet I can understand that, you know, we don't want to leave out the school boards, we don't want the associations. And maybe there would be a way to add an amendment that would say that the representatives that serve on these task forces would represent the organizations. I mean, I
another idea.
Senator
Olson. Well, Mr. Chairman, another idea might be that where we talk about the Commissioner of Education, say the Commissioner of Education shall, in consultation with the respective organizations, select and convene a task force of, and then we've listed the generic names. And you wouldn't have to put all those organization names in the statute.
I think that's an excellent suggestion, and perhaps we could ask council to perfect that language, and we could entertain a motion that Ms. Junker do that. We also, on the amendment by Senator Saltzman, have the provision on page 67, line 18, addressing the emphasis on math and reading. It's a separate issue. But if I could ask on that issue, is there any further discussion? And Senator Stumpf, would you be supportive or
dividing that amendment?
Yeah, we could divide it, or
it's good. Fine with me to divide it, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Okay, we'll divide that. And which one would you like to take first? We'll take, how about the first one on the strong emphasis?
Yes, lines 1.3 and 1.4, Mr. Chair, and then the rest of that amendment, I would wait, you know, for Senate Council to suggest some language as Senator Olson brought up. I think that.
Okay, we have before us the A31, where we'll focus on 1.3 and 1.4, page 67, line 18. Further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
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 Motion carried. And then for the issue of representation by specific organizations in the appointments, we'll have council put together language that Senator Olson had just suggested, which I think we reached consensus on. Understood? Okay, Senator Henn, on this or another amendment?
No, Mr. Chairman, this is related to this, and I'm just going to offer this to the committee for, since we're going to ask for an amendment to be drafted. But in looking through the language here that talks about these two task force and the people that make them up, there is no one listed in these members who has had experience and practice in structuring evaluation systems or necessarily has any experience at all in being involved in a system that manages and supervises and gives appraisals. And so the thing I'm concerned about is you have a bunch of folks that are here, and they may represent different parts of the education system, but they may not ever have tried to implement, develop and implement an appraisal system. And I think that that is something we should pay attention to, because I can tell you as a person that's managed a lot of people and hired people and fired people, it's not easy. And I don't claim to be an expert at it, but it does require, I think, some practical experience. And it may be that with all these people here, none of them may have that. So I just would ask maybe if there's a thought that that might make sense to have some addition to that amendment reflect the desire to have someone who's had some practical experience in managing and developing appraisal systems.
And presumably the group or commissioner making the appointments would factor that in who they would get. That's just an assumption, but whether we wanted to make that clear as an instruction, I leave that for Senator Stumpf if he'd like to, you know, be further specific or just trust the appointments would keep that in mind, since that's a subject.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hand, I think you hit on a good item, and I would ask the commissioner maybe, because I think in the commissioner or in the department's language, there was also a task force, so I'm not sure exactly, can't remember exactly how that was identified. But I think the language where the commissioner has to provide assistance, I think that would be kind of fit in there, but I definitely think it wouldn't hurt to have that spelled out a little more clearly. And maybe the commissioner can mention how she envisioned it in the governor's package.
Commissioner Segrin.
Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, are we talking about the technical?
The task, yeah, the two task forces.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. We've been talking back in the corner like naughty children. Mr. Chair, the way we envisioned the task force was that in regard to the teacher evaluation system, or any of the evaluation systems, we would have the majority of the people that would be affected by that to be the majority of the board or the task force, and we would have also other education stakeholders that would also have a voice at the table, and, you know, other interested parties that would want to help do this. I appreciate the discussion. It wasn't my intent that I would be controlling this whole thing. We always go to the educational organizations and ask for their recommendations, because as Executive Director Kite said, you know, they know who in the field or is the, you know, the best person to, you know, be part of this task force. So I think somebody had mentioned some good language that I overheard that would kind of clarify that. You wouldn't have to name every organization, but could clarify how we want to do that. We would be perfectly happy with that suggestion.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hand and Senator or Commissioner, I think Senator Hand wanted to zero in on the knowledge of appraisals, and that you could have all of the people on this board, yet maybe no one with the expertise. Now, obviously, your department has expertise in testing, but should there be some expertise on these task forces that would relate to appraisals and how the appraisal process would be set up?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf and Senator Hand, yes, I think that's a good suggestion, to just to make sure that we do have people that would have some expertise in that. Our intent would certainly be that we would be bringing in and examining different kinds of appraisal systems that have been developed. Just for your information, many of our school districts use the Charlotte Danielson rubric. That is a very tried and tested rubric that looks at the instructional practice of teachers. So that would certainly be something that we would be looking at. And we would look at others, too, to see, you know, what we would want to do. So we would certainly want to bring in a lot of information about that. So we would take that all into consideration as we were putting together.
You're getting the firsthand information from the person that would put it together, if that's good enough for you, or we could go as far as measuring the proficiency of their background in appraisals. Really walk the talk.
Mr. Chair, we'd probably have a test for everyone. And Senator Rummel shaking her head.
Perhaps Senator Hand is satisfied with the intent. Mr. Nauman has a question.
Actually, Mr. Chair, once you're completed with this amendment, the department's approach will be on the issue that I'll just bring to the committee's attention.
Okay. Ms. Junker is working on some language. We're not quite there yet.
Mr. Chair, members, the language would need to amend Senator Bonhoff's A-10 amendment that we adopted earlier today, because that's where they put has the addition of the members being appointed by the commissioner.
Okay, we'll go to the 810 amendment.
Or maybe if people, if members have time to pull that out. So we'd amend Senator Bonhoff's A10 amendment in two spots. First, on line 1.8, after education, insert after consultation with the respective professional organizations. And then,
excuse me, does everyone have it? Because
I don't.
We may have to share. Raise your hand if you were still. Okay, Senator Stump.
Oh, got it.
Here we go.
Okay.
Senator Colby or someone could share with Senator Stump. Thank you.
So then I'll go back. I'll repeat that again.
On the A10.
On the A10, line 1.8, after education, insert after consultation with the respective professional organizations. And then on line 1.15, after education, insert in consultation with the respective professional organizations. So it'd be the same. So then that would be the same for the teacher's appraisal system and the principal superintendent appraisal system task force, that the public school employees basically are the are appointed in consultation with their respective organizations.
Members, how's that sound? Okay, procedurally get before us. Senator Michelle, having voted on the prevailing side, moves to reconsider the 810 amendment. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. We now have the 810 before us. Senator Saltzman moves to amend the 810 as just described by Ms. Yunker. Discussion. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the 810 as amended. All in favor, indicate aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Council. Okay. Senator Torres-Reid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the A32 amendment.
Which number?
A32.
The A32 will be distributed.
And Mr. Chairman, and while it is distributed, I would like to let the members know that a student from the school that I'm going to be talking about with this amendment has been following me since 8 in the morning and still here waiting to see about this decision. So he's been here for about 12 and a half hours trying to figure out if we're going to make a decision about his school. So I'm very thankful to Mr. Ellis and to his student for being here and being so patiently waiting for this. Members, you probably, Mr. Chairman, you probably remember testimony about the high school for recording arts. They were here about a week ago to talk about the process by which the commissioner and the department selected the lowest, the persistently lowest achieving schools and designated a group that included the high school for recording arts. They have had extensive conversations with the U.S. Department of Education and pointed out that these schools should have not been included in that list. They are in the process of trying to figure out if they can do this through an agreement, but we are not sure that they're gonna be able to get there because the commissioner and the department may have to change the criteria in order to do that, which they don't want to do that because they have another group of schools which will receive this funding. So what this amendment will do is basically give the commissioner permission to get this school out of that list that was put in place. And they work extensively on this language to make sure that it will give the commissioner that permission to do so without really jeopardizing the proposal for the other schools. So this proposal hopefully will take care of the school itself without harming the group and the proposal that the department put in place. And I understand that this language is okay with the department. So I would like to move
believe
the A32.
Commissioner Segrin, are you nodding in agreement? Okay, record will show the department does support this. Further discussion on the A32 amendment. Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair, we're hunting for the growth model reference. I think it would be appropriate on line 1.11 after model insert comma under section 120B.299. Hi, Maren.
Senator Torres-Ray incorporates that as a friendly amendment. Senator Stumpf.
I'm fine with it. I think it's, I'm fine.
Okay, further discussion? Not. And we thank you for your patience and your service for being here today. On the A32 amendment, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, and he also brought copies of the City Pages article about his school that he would like us to read. So you have it in front of you.
We will. Thank you.
Very proud of it.
Mr. Nauman.
So, Mr. Chair and members, similar to the issue that cropped up with Senator Rummel's amendment earlier, where the commissioner was required to do something, the department has gone through and looked for musts, and they found two more that they'd like you to consider changing to mays that would eliminate a potential fiscal effect. So on line, page 68, line 14, and page 69, line 4. In both cases, the commissioner is given a must requirement, and I think the department would ask you to consider a may in the event that it would neuter some of the fiscal effects. Mr. Chair, I have not spoken to Senator Stumpf about
that. Are you acceptable to that?
Yes, we want to kind of wash out fiscal effects.
Hey, Senator Koch moves those two suggestions where the word must is deleted and we insert may at the two references. Further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next amendment. Are there any further amendments? Senator Scogan.
The A30. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A30.
The A30 amendment is being distributed. Senator Scogan.
Mr. Chair and members, I think we're still on non-controversial. This will take you to page 30, section 20. As you know, we established the Healthy Kids Awards program in previous legislation, and it got a little bit over the top in that it indicates that the commissioner will be, or the schools will be required to kind of evaluate how they're doing on Healthy Kids Awards programs kind of by student. The amendment will actually just soften that up to let schools kind of glob everybody together and explain what kind of programs they're doing to make kids healthier. I'd appreciate your support.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scogan, thank you for bringing this forward. The other thing I like about this amendment is it puts our focus on nutrition, which we hadn't done in the previous document with the Healthy Awards, and we all know nutrition is critical. So
sure,
I accept it.
Yes, and I do not want to downplay the importance of physical fitness in our children because whether it's through nutrition or physical exercise, I think it's our responsibility as legislators, and in particular, we're responsible for some of the education policy. We have a role to play in our children's future health and well-being. So, yes.
Further discussion? Not. Senator Scogan renews the A30 amendment. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have the A28 I'd like to offer, please.
The A28 amendment will be distributed. Senator Michelle.
Mr. Chair and members, while I briefly summarize this, if I could ask Mr. Kite to join us at the table briefly. Members, this is regarding staff basic revenue on staff development. So the A28 would restore current law, members. Current law, we have a 2-year suspension on the requirement
for school districts to spend 2% of basic revenue on staff development. So that's current law now. And this language would...
What page are we talking about?
79.
At page 79.
Thank you.
So this amendment, Mr. Chair and members, would continue that suspension. Mr. Kite would like to speak to it briefly.
Mr. Kite.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll be brief. When you passed, the legislature passed last year the suspension of the 2% set aside in light of the fact that there was zero new funding for schools. School districts across the state, while we fully acknowledge the importance of staff development, frankly used an awful lot of that money to just try to keep teachers on staff and run their schools. We have just now completed the budgeting process for next year, even as you're still working on it. If you reinstate this 2%, and if that passes the legislature, we would have to go back and make significant additional cuts in our funding to set this money aside. To give you a quick example, a $40 million school district, which is a kind of a roughly middle-sized district, would have to lift $800,000 out of their budget, slash more programs so they could set a money aside for this. So we're very concerned about this. This is kind of changing horses in the middle of the stream here. So we appeal to you to reconsider that. Thank you.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, and members, the rationale for the staff development, return of the staff development money was basically if we're going to try to encourage programs to enhance the quality of our teaching, and I realize that it's gotten to be kind of a staple program for the general fund rather than for the enhancement of our teachers and the quality of the teachers. But, I mean, we need to have staff development. If we were successful in the race to the top endeavor, that would provide some funds. There's just not enough resources there, but I think it's unfair to try to put together a proposal to enhance the quality of our teachers and then take all the staff development money and put it into the general fund. And I supported that last year too. So I realize it's a very difficult decision, but I'm not sure. I think we need to support our efforts in enhancing the quality of teaching.
Okay. Senator Scogin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Stumpf, I agree that staff development, I think in any industry where professionals are involved, is important part of keeping morale and doing the most with the latest technology and information that we have available to us. We've got some problems out where I live in these buildings, and I was wondering if Senator Michelle might be interested in just a two-year extension rather than a full repeal of that.
Chair Michelle.
Mr. Chair,
I think staff development is important, an important part of the process.
Does it repeal it?
I would consider that a good direction. I think, Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, it was what we did last year was wise. The financial conditions are still tough, and I think we should continue it in the short term. So if it was the will of the committee, Mr. Chair, I'd certainly look at some more language on this. I understand Senator Stump's a little reluctant to.
Okay, we're going to further feel the pulse here, and Senator Bonds.
Mr. Chair and members, the thing that I am concerned about is that there's been almost an unfair distribution of staff development dollars around our state, that those school districts who, for whatever reason, have been part of QCOMP have had significant staff development dollars. Those school districts that have not been able to be part of QCOMP haven't had any. And when I've talked to those school districts, they really aren't getting any staff development dollars. And so that really concerns me as we look at some of the problems we're having with achievement in all parts of the state. It isn't just in one area or another. And so I don't know the right answer. I like that this bill, we've found a way for school districts to come together to participate in QCOMP, but there's no assurance that they will. And do we have the money forecasted to take care of them if they do choose that? One, you know, I don't have the answer. One other thought is somehow tie it to if we get the Race to the Top funding, then we could for sure continue with this setting aside the set aside because we'd have additional funds. So I don't have an answer, but I'm just letting you know the concerns that I have.
Senator Saxhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And speaking to Senator Michelle's amendment, I think as Mr. Kite makes the best point, and that's the timing is terrible right now. Most of the budgets have been set, and so it'll just it could force school districts. And the phones have been hot and heavy this afternoon. It's going to force many school districts to lay off FTEs.
Senator Olson, then we'll ask Ms. Salzwager to address the committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if the amendment just repeals that section, which doesn't take it out of current law. It just takes it out of the amendment, so it would leave current language. So that would leave the 2010 and 2011. It would be for those 2 years.
Right.
I wondered if there is another way that you could, whether it relates to the application for or some demonstrable commitment to funds a significant portion or however much that is would come if we were successful in the application be devoted to staff development. Because right now, you're right, we don't have anything to fill in the gap if you remove this. And so if you don't, I'm not sure what good this does. You're trying to develop staff that you're going to have less of because you've had to lay them off because of making the change. So it's kind of a catch-22 here for us.
Mr. Kite, then Ms. Halswiger, and we'll return to some committee.
Chairman Wieger and members of the committee, I have a communication from Denny Carlson, the superintendent of Anoka-Hennepin. This is a $2 million hit for them. This will cause them to lay off 40 more teachers. If I could put a touch of humor in this, at least there'll be less people to evaluate. But you know, this is a very untimely change. If you think about Race to the Top, and if, even though it's probably a long shot, you get the money, some of that money ultimately is certainly going to go towards staff development. But to pull this money aside right now is going to be a very significant problem for our schools across the state.
Ms. Salzberger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education, Minnesota. And I just would like to remind you of the current law. And that is that if there is a budget situation, the school board, a majority of the school board members and a majority of the teachers may vote to reduce the amount of staff development revenue that is reserved anywhere from this current law is 2% all the way to zero. It could be 1%. We have teachers' unions who have gone to the school board and said, yeah, I think it's time for us to work out an agreement. If a school, in a school district, if the teachers' union decide that they want to make sure that they reserve that amount of money, whatever, the 2%, the reason they're doing that is because they have a particular professional development need. It might be the implementation of QCOMP. It might be the implementation of a language arts curriculum or a math curriculum. Whatever it be, the reason that they would not want to reduce that amount is because they have a professional need. Know that when the amount is reserved, it means that there is less money for negotiations. They are making a professional decision. We think that keeping the 2% staff development set aside in any year is appropriate. We believe that the current law allows for flexibility. If you talk to superintendents across the state, you will see that that flexibility is working, and in a number of school districts, they have reduced that amount. That makes it a local control. Here, I think you are telling the districts what they can or cannot do. In addition, any district that is in statutory operating debt does not have to have even a conversation with the teachers' union. They may make a unilateral decision to go to zero or anything below 2%.
Thank you. Senator Saltzman.
So just to reinforce what both Senator Sump and Ms. Alzweiger said, I think that given the fact that this bill has so much in it about professional development for teachers, that for us to be putting a bold package like this forward and then suggesting that we will also remove this 1 year, this additional year, I think is making a strong statement that we believe in investing in our teachers. But again, to know that there is that option to opt out with our local school boards and with our teachers. So I would think that we maybe should rethink that, knowing that there is an option for school districts to be able to make that decision.
Further discussion, Senator Henn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I support Senator Michelle's amendment. I am not familiar with school districts that have successfully done this by action. I'm sure there may be one or two, but I'm not familiar with them. And it's a difficult process to go through, and it does require effort that they may not be successful in doing it. I think that to me, the question is, you've elected people at the local level to manage the schools, school board members. They understand what their finances are. They understand the importance of development. Why they cannot make a good decision, and we can, is beyond me. This is a decision that is entirely appropriate to be made at the local level. And every district is different, has different circumstances. We should, I would be in favor of doing away with it altogether, which is not as far as what this amendment would do. But I think Mr. Kite's point about setting in place an expectation for 2 years that this is what the lay of the land is going to be, and then after 1 year, changing it, I just think you're going to see people get laid off that otherwise wouldn't be. And so I would recommend that we accept the amendment.
Further comments before we vote? Hey, Senator Michelle renews the A28 motion. Senator Rummel.
Just to clarify, Mr. Chair, Senator Michelle, are you renewing the amendment for a limited 2 years as suggested by?
No, I don't. Just take the change out.
Mr. Nolman.
Mr. Chairman and Senators, I think it might be helpful just to clarify what's happening here. In last year's K-12 bill, we suspended the 2% set aside and allowed school districts to spend the dollars how they wished, as if it was general fund. So in other words, that 2% set aside went away for fiscal 10 and 11. So the delete all amendment that's in front of you, the A3, proposes to turn that back on and effectively turn it back into staff development. That's what Dr. Kite spoke to for fiscal year 11, and then it would continue after that because the language that we have in front of us in the original bill from last year was for only 2 years.
Right.
So effectively, it returns it back to permanent law. But in order to make that happen, we have to amend last year's uncodified language. So what you have is an amendment now by Senator Michelle to remove that section from the bill, which would effectively leave allow the school districts to spend the money how they wanted to and how they budgeted for without the staff development requirement.
That's for 1 year.
Well, it's for 2 years, Senator, because we're in that first year already. So we're really talking about fiscal 11.
Further discussion?
So Chair,
Senator Olson.
So, Mr. Chair, if you're for jobs, you vote for the amendment.
Senator Stump, last word.
Well, I've met with a lot of teachers, and Senator Bonhoff mentioned, and I believe you were in one meeting that we had, and it is very true. I mean, if you want to look at the metropolitan area, your schools have $260 more per pupil than the rural schools do. And the reason is because some of the programs are so much more accessible to the metropolitan and suburban districts. These educators that I think even down here, if Anoka Hennepin that Mr. Kite mentioned, I think the educators actually approached the board when the cuts were being proposed. So I think the process does work, Senator Han. I don't think that in rural areas that it happens almost regularly. So I think the question for us is, how do we initiate and carry out a enhanced kind of training, and we're going to be asking quite a bit more of our quality of our programs and teaching. How do you do that? It's not going to be any easier next year when we are faced with a relatively large deficit to try to tell our districts, well, now we want to take it back. And, you know, I'm not sure what the answer is. I know the answer is that either way is tough. And I guess I would like to, you know, find I'd like to support some revenue out there for staff development.
On the 828 motion, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Next amendment. Senator Han?
I have the 827 amendment I'd like to offer.
The 827 will be distributed. Senator Han.
Members, and I am offering this. This is Article 6, it's deleting Section 3, which is on page 44 and over on 45. And it essentially is just, there's some new language on page 45, paragraph F, that talks about the adoption of Common Core state standards under the decision of the commissioner and the committee chairs in the K-12 committees in the House and the Senate. And then these adopted rules or adopted standards then are I guess, provisionally adopted, but then finally adopted through an expedited process. And the concern I have is that I think that the adoption of standards with respect to curriculum, it's unclear to me exactly what we're doing here, I guess. And perhaps someone can talk a little bit more in detail about it, but it seems to me that we may not want to do it this way, and perhaps we need to have the legislature be aware of what those standards are before we adopt them, or at least have some way to make sure that what they are is consistent with what we've had in mind as we've had our standards discussions in the past.
Okay, we'll ask the commissioner or designee to respond to Senator Han. And yes, Ms. Klinzing.
Thank you. Karen Klinzing, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Education. Chair Wieger, Senator Han, members of the committee. What the process usually is for standards, or has been since 2005, is that we convene teachers and business and higher ed and other interested stakeholders to review national standards that exist that are voluntary, as well as other models of standards in the subject area. Through a series of meetings, they decide upon what kind of standards document they would like, and then those go out for public comment, including town meetings and being posted on the website. Following that round, a second draft is then produced, and that second draft is produced based on the comments and feedback that was received, and then that goes out to also national experts who review the standards documents for coherency and focus. And then those come, we do a third draft, and there are some stakeholder meetings again with the public. Following that process, then a final draft is created, posted for 2 weeks on the website, and then sent to the administrative law judge after a SONAR is written, and which is a statement of needs and reasonableness. And then the administrative law judge process takes, or administrative law rule hearing takes place. Hearing is only called if there are enough comments submitted by the public to require a hearing. If that's not the case, then the standards are put into rule without a public hearing. We have gone through that process now for math in 2007. We've gone through it for art in 2008. We've gone through that process for science in 2009. And we are currently working on that process for English language arts in 2010. With the Common Core coming on the scenes, we are currently with our group of English language arts stakeholders reviewing the Common Core document for English language arts, and they are considering that to be, along with 15% more, to go through the similar process. We also have convened the math group again to review the Common Core math standards to see how they would fit in Minnesota, to see if we would like to adopt those through our usual process. Neither of these, this timeline is not actually sufficient to make the Common Core standards something that's adopted for in Minnesota, along with our 15% of Minnesota standards added to those, in time for us to qualify for according to the Race to the Top criteria. They were the plan we had in place to adopt these by August of 2010 was sufficient in our first round, and we did get full points for that by most reviewers. But in this next round, they've not changed the due date for adoption, and we are in a shorter time frame. So the proposal you have before you, it would be to have the group that's enumerated here on page 45 adopt or provisionally approve those to suffice for the application, and then have that provisionally approved document go through the rule hearing that, or the rule process that we are accustomed to with standards.
Thank you, Ms. Klenzing. And Dr. Ephraim, we'll ask you to give testimony in just a moment. Senator Hand, do you have a follow-up?
Well, Mr. Chairman, yes, and thank you, Commissioner Klenzing. I appreciate the clarification. I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. So this is really here because of the timeline that is in place that would not allow us to normally do the standards adoption as we've done it in the past. And so what you're saying is that this would allow the commissioner to provisionally adopt standards, and then there would be subsequent to that this language about the adopted by rule in accordance with that's the process you're describing, where it would go out for public hearing, a public comment, and then final approval based on that. I guess the other question I would have, maybe you can comment a little
bit. The record show, I believe she nodded in the affirmative.
Yes, sorry.
That's correct.
But could you talk a little bit about what is the Common Core state standards, and why are we doing this rather than just relying on the standards that we have developed as a state?
Well, for English language arts, we are looking at the Common Core much like we would usually look at national standards documents when we go to write documents for the state, and we don't believe we need to rewrite things that are in good shape. In this case, we can Minnesotaize these with the 15% that the adopting the Common Core would allow if we wanted to be eligible for Race to the Top. So I would guess, given the public comment we've received so far on the English language arts side, that the standards, the Common Core would be adopted as is, but also probably adding 15% of to that standards document. And again, as you said, it would go through the administrative rule hearing process. just like it would, and there'd be ample opportunity for more of the public to comment at that point. The math standards, since we just went through a revision process, it's kind of off the typical revision process for us to do that at this time. But we are doing it, we're looking at it, we're looking over the Common Core because we know we need to consider those if we want to be eligible for Race to the Top.
Okay. Senator Dahl?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, I actually support your amendment. I just went to the Common Core Standards Policy Summit this weekend in Chicago. And the reason, there's lots of reasons why we should do it, perhaps, but I believe that we're moving too quickly on this. One of the common themes that we went over this weekend was you got to have buy-in. You got to have buy-in from the teachers. You got to have buy-in from the administrators. You've got to see the standards. You got to have buy-in from the legislature. And at no time did we discuss giving the commissioner or the chairs of the House and Senate the jurisdiction to expedite. There was some mention of Race to the Top, but this needs to be a well-thought-out process. Matter of fact, there's another core standards meeting at the Lexington in St. Paul next week. And I think Senator Stumpf and maybe the commissioner and I have been invited and some others. So absolutely, we need to hold off on this one.
Senator Bonoff, and then we'll have your testimony, Dr. Ephraim. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and members, I appreciate the discussion, and the timeline is ridiculous that the Race to the Top application put forward, that you had to get all this done. And so I know that our commissioner did address that, tried to get an exception, as did many chiefs. And there is a significant amount of points for, I think what the Race to the Top is looking for is a willingness on behalf of states that we're moving to Common Core standards so that everybody has an equal education. That's kind of the background philosophy. And in this, along with a few other things, is sort of half-baked the way they did it. Nonetheless, that's how they did it. And so what I like about this is that it doesn't tie us to it because it says provisionally, and I suspect that would be enough to get us through the process without tying us down. And Senator Dahl, absolutely, we do need buy-in by everybody, and it should go through that formal process, and who knows where we all end up. But I'd hate to get rid of this language and then lose 20 points for nothing when all we're saying is provisional. It's not that.
Response?
It's not binding.
Senator Dahl?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, Race to the Top should not be our driving force for bad policy. Minnesota is a quality state in terms of education. We are picking at these little things that try to bring us up from a level that we are very high in already to the next step with what I say is bad policy. And I think this is one example. I've got a few others that we can talk about, but that cannot be the driving factor in what we're doing with our schools and our children at this time.
Okay, Dr. Ephraim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Karen Ephraim. I'm here on behalf of EdWatch. And I would like to ask for this to be distributed. Yes. This is my testimony from the House sole hearing on the Common Core standards, and I would just respectfully remind this committee that you have had no hearings on the Common Core standards, and you're asking the state to adopt them by whatever means you are doing, and that doesn't make a lot of sense. I would bring before you two pieces of information from groups on divergent points on the political spectrum. The first is the Economic Policy Institute, which is a group that promotes the needs of middle and lower income people, Americans, and they did a paper called Let's Do the Number. The Department of Education's Race to the Top program offers only a muddled path to the finish line. They said that the process appears scientific and numerical. But they then said, however, further examination suggests that the selection of Delaware and Tennessee was subjective and arbitrary, more a matter of bias or chance than a result of these states' superior compliance with reform policies. They then went on to say, and this is a group on the center left of the spectrum, they went on to say that such gaming as is likely to happen in the second round of applications is unlikely to reflect an actual improvement in the educational policies of applicant states. That's a center left group. Center right group, the Cato Institute, Neil McCluskey, did a long policy piece on whether national standards do any good. He said, what little comparative research there is on national standards is inconclusive. Nations vary markedly, not just in terms of economics and politics, but culture and other variables that are extremely difficult, if not impossible, to cleanly control for in social research. The same applies to subnational political units such as U.S. states and Canadian provinces. And it is hardly a settled question that test scores such as those used in standards research even encompass all the most desired educational outcomes. The House hearing had Dr. Larry Gray and Ellen Delaney, who were instrumental in making Minnesota's math standards among the best in the country. Dr. James Milgram from Stanford University, who was validating the math standards, said that it appears that these standards are not at, they're at a lower level than California, Massachusetts, Minnesota, and Indiana in the highest achieving countries. Dr. Gray and Ms. Delaney said that they are not likely to be ready for prime time. Provisionally adopting this just to get race to the top points, which we probably won't get anyway, if you believe this, really makes no sense. And the language in the bill says expedited process on 4519, which means that there won't be public hearings. So please, please listen to Senator Dahl and Senator Hand and get rid of this.
Thank you, Dr. Ephraim. Senator Olson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Dr. Ephraim, for your comprehensive. I think I did read your testimony. Delivered and you sent it, I don't know if it was by email or what, but anyway, I appreciate it. I attended, along with Senator Bonhoff and Senator Stumpf and the commissioner and some folks from Doer and can't remember who all else was, over to the national meeting that was held amazingly in Minnesota with, for all the states that may be pursuing that race to the top, and also to hear from these two winning states. And this, the issue of Common Core standards was one of the first ones that the Department of Education people talked to, and it was quite clear that you've got to adopt these Common Core standards. And you know, as you say, nobody's seen them. I mean, I know there's folks that are working on them, but I don't know if has anybody seen a set of standards for any subject to read or whatever. I think they're kind of a work in progress, and yet they were absolutely emphatic that you had to do that. And I raised the question of whether, what if our standards are already higher than what you have? She didn't even talk about, nobody ever would bring up this, whatever this 15% means. It said you have to adopt the course, Common Core standards. It was just a very, very dogmatic statement that this is it. And you know, I don't like to be a conspiracy theorist, but the federal government has been good at bullying states to force them to do things that are not constitutionally within the federal government's jurisdiction. I mean, we've had to do primary seat belts, or otherwise we're going to lose our money. We had years back, we had to have a 55 mile an hour speed limit. Transportation was a prime example. Here we go, and this has been clever. The states have got to come up with these Common Core standards, which are national standards, but it makes it look like the states are doing it. But we have to do it. And if I were a betting person, I would be willing to bet money that when they renew what's the Elementary Secondary Education Act, which has been most recently called No Child Left Behind, that there's going to be a link to the money that comes in that bill to adopting Common Core standards. And it's I appreciate your comments on the uniqueness of whether it's the provincial areas in Canada, that there are things that we need to do that are unique. And if we want to set high standards, we should be able to do it. And this really irritates me that the federal government is and rushing headlong without even very, very good thought to do it. That to me is one of the most troublesome things. Some of the other things I think are reforms we've been working on anyway. We have been working on standards. But to come at it in this way and just force us to do it just, it goes against my grain. So I...
Members, there, I sense I the direction it. Of the committee and Senator Stump, we can vote if you'd like to offer concluding remarks.
Senator Uyghur and members of the committee, I just want to clarify a couple things. First of all, the Common Core would be the minimum standard, and that 15% is there so that we can go higher, and we have room to go higher with our so the Common Core is a very high minimum and much higher minimum than probably what we're accustomed to. Secondly, this does not actually avoid a public hearing, unlike what the testimony just said now. There still has to be public hearing according to this. Also, the process of expedited rulemaking that the commissioner would have for these is the same process she currently has for our standards. So that's not different. What's different is we're actually here saying, do you have the political will to support a provisional approval, which is something that we normally wouldn't have to come and do. We're just doing it to show that political will for the Race to the Top application. So that's something, it's a gesture. So I just want to make sure that was clear, that these are state standards. We would just use these as a base and add to it the 15%.
Senator Han renews the A27 amendment. All in favor indicate aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails.
Division.
All in favor, raise your hand. All opposed, raise your hand. The hands could be up a little higher. We. Okay, there being seven ayes and eight noes, the motion nearly does not prevail. I believe we have four more written amendments at the table. Who'd like to go next? Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A16.
The A16 is being distributed. Senator Scogin.
Well, Mr. Chair, I may need some help with this. From Ms. Alschweiger, but this is where the collecting bargaining agreements between the school and their employees, as it starts to break down, the commissioner can step in and try to help them resolve it, but it gets very cumbersome. It actually opens a door to just about any kind of impasse that may occur. From instructional stuff to limitations on hiring, and there's timelines involved in there, and it just seems the commissioner first is directed to establish some of these student academic achievement levels, and then gets into trying to mediate if the two groups can't get all together on it, and commissioner ends up being kind of the judge, jury, and executioner here, and I'm just moving that we, with the A16, that we delete lines 12 through 36 on page 46.
Dan Senator Scogin's motion. Discussion. Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry to be the naysayer on every amendment, but I just wanted to point out that in the first bill that the governor and the commissioner presented, it gave the commissioner the right to intervene in low-performing schools. And so we were concerned about that right. We thought, that's pretty blanket approval that we didn't think that gave our school districts and our bargaining units enough power. And so we heard about Delaware, who had a very comprehensive system that gave the bargaining units a lot of time to work something out in these lowest performing schools. And so the language we put in the bill mirrors that. It gives them 75 days first to try and work things out and then submit a plan. If that plan's not approved, it gives them another 30 days, and only after 105 days does the commissioner have any ability to come in and do something on her own. I'm open to what the committee thinks would be a better approach, but that was the thinking, that we actually wanted to protect the teachers' power to work things out themselves.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman, I think, and I wish I could remember, but and maybe the department can help me out. The turnaround schools are I think there's like 30 school districts that have been labeled, and I think of those districts, not all of them are actually would fall into that category. But this would be, to get into that category, I think it takes several, maybe help me out.
Commissioner Segrin, would you like to rejoin us?
It's not as if it's a one-shot deal and you're in that type of a school. It's these are school districts that have been repeatedly failing. That's correct.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scogin, in the Race to the Top application, there is a section that focuses on turnaround schools and gives some very direct directions, I guess, as to the identification. After the identification of those schools, then there are four strategies that can be used in regard to those turnaround schools. They're very specific, and they are to, if you have a persistently low-achieving school, you either could close the school, turn the school into a charter school, replace half of the teachers and the principal, or replace just the principal and have what they call a transformational strategy. So those are the four things in the Race to the Top. In our original application, we did not do anything with the authority of the commissioner. What we do right now with our school districts that are in the lowest performing categories is to work with them. There's a requirement for school improvement plans, et cetera, but there's no, except to just, you know, talk to them and hope that they're going to, you know, do things differently. There's really no authority. Well, under this application, the direction and the criteria is to say no, that they want to see some aggressive strategies to help these schools turn around so that the kids can be successful. So when we looked at the winning applications, it was clear that, and part of the original criteria was to ask the question, does the commissioner in your state have the authority to intervene in low-performing schools? Well, the only authority I have is under the No Child Left Behind law, which says if a school district has been persistently low-performing after, I think it's 5, 6, or 7 years, I think it's quite a ways out, the commissioner can go in and actually have the authority to do things with a school district. And so the application really drills down into individual school sites and was looking for the authority of the commissioner to be able to go in and intervene. So we looked at the Delaware model, because Delaware is a highly unionized state just like Minnesota is, to see how did they do it. Because I have stated publicly I'm not excited about or have the even the staff to be going in and handling, you know, lots of schools. And I would not go in with a heavy-handed fist. That's not my style anyway. But Delaware, what they did to address it was to say, all right, you're going to have you'll have a period of time of which you're eligible then for some monies, but we want to give the management and union time to sit down. They would decide which of those strategies that they would select, and they would negotiate around it. So let's say it would be to do the transformational model. Then they would sit down and they would decide, okay, what kinds of things are they going to do differently, and go through all of the different maybe curriculum decisions, staffing changes or whatever. They would work on that, present that to the commissioner. The commissioner would say, and they would say, we agree, fine, that's what you're going to do. If after 75 days they haven't quite gotten to the agreement, they would give the commissioner a last best final offer. So there might be some small disagreements in some areas, and then the commissioner could look at that and say, okay, well, let's do this here and that there, and then that's the agreement. If they completely couldn't agree and they were at impasse, then the commissioner would say, all right, try a different model or go back and do this for another 30 days. And then after that, if they were at impasse, then the commissioner has the authority then to say, okay, we're going to do this. And that's what you have to carry out. So that's what we looked at. We thought that made sense, that it was, you know, a much more of a negotiated process than having, you know, some kind of, you know, ability for a commissioner to go in and just say to a school site, this is what you're going to do, and I'm going to tell you what to do. So that's the rationale behind the language.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Scogin.
And Commissioner, I think Senator Dahl touched on it, the buy-in part, and at some point the commissioner is telling them what to do. And if there's not buy-in, I just can't believe that there's going to be a real desire by one of the two parties to get the work done.
Well, Mr. Chair, and certainly the intent was to, you know, to create that ability to talk through that and negotiate that. And, you know, so there wasn't an intent to not create that. I think it was actually the intent to bring the people together to work on whatever strategy that they wanted to and hammer it out together without, you know, that kind of, you know, situation where I would just come in.
Ms. Allswager.
Mr. Chairman, it's the committee, Jan Allswager, Education, Minnesota. And I believe that in Race to the Top, one of the provisions, requirements of it is that they really aren't supposed to be changing the collective bargaining laws. And so I think because of that provision, I could stand corrected some of the fine-tuning of that interpretation. But because that's in place, this then would supersede some of those requirements. We believe that this provision would become a very political position provision, because if the commissioner is one party or the other, may side with one group or the other, and that really isn't the intent of, I don't think, Race to the Top, if that is indeed what this is all trying to deal with. The local unions, the school boards are the best to figure out how to make decisions. And we do not think that submitting offers to the commissioner is in the best interest of making these decisions. So we would strongly support this amendment.
Further comments or questions? Senator Robley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I oppose the amendment. And I was reading this before this discussion came up. And I thought, you know what? We are going to finally try and do something that will help the kids. Not necessarily the school boards and not necessarily the employees, but help the kids. So if they're failing and they're not doing well in school, but we need to address various things, whether it's the day of the or the school day or the school calendar, the school year, whether it's where we need certain types of teachers. But some people wouldn't want to go there, but this would give them the ability to move those teachers around to where they're most needed. And I thought, this is a good thing. I was almost surprised to see it in here because it seems so forward-thinking, because it's something that could probably make a difference for those kids. And I would hate to see this eliminated because there is an opportunity here for them to reach agreement, 105 days worth of opportunity before anything would happen. And I do think that those groups want what's best for kids. And I do think that they would work on this. Given the deadlines and everything, I do believe they would work hard to try and make this work. And so I don't know why we wouldn't leave this in here, because I think it's doable.
Senator Scogin renews his motion, the A16. Any further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Senator Scogin.
I got one that's a little tougher. So it's my last one, and I'm tired, so let's get on with it, the A11.
Tougher on who?
Senator Scogin, the
tougher to understand.
A11?
The A11.
The A11. I believe there's two more in the pile, if you're wondering.
Members, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I apologize for my levity. This is important stuff, and this is an amendment that I have only just recently seen. So, I'm going to maybe need a little help from Senator Dahl or Senator or Ms. Olschwager to help with some of the explanation. This deals with the tiered licensure. Just at first glance, you know, and I think this committee. Commend Senator Dahl a little bit for carrying a lot of water today. I took a couple of these for him because he didn't want to offer them all, and I appreciate his efforts today as well. But, you know, this really ties employment and effectiveness and licensure and standards all together, and when you look at the amendment, we're going to be jumping from page 49 through page 63 and the leading different sections that deal with the tiered licensure. I think maybe what it comes down to for me when I looked at it, and again only briefly, you know, what's good in Anoka not always good for Wadena Deer Creek or Pelican Rapids, and I think what we take away with the language that's here a little bit is some of the local control when we set some of these statewide standards on this licensure and the effectiveness for students and teachers and whether or not they'll be employed. And so that is the best explanation I can give you, members. And with that, I move the A11.
Okay. Comments? Senator Dahl?
Mr. Chair, I support Senator Scogin's amendment. And, you know, as we look at, remember we were given these proposals a while back, it was kind of plopped on the table and said, I know these are controversial, and then we didn't really talk about them, and here we are. Well, again, we are making dramatic changes in a system that is working and getting better. And I actually think that there's a danger that the way we're treating our teachers, that... I think we could go the opposite way. When we start tiering, you know, competition in terms of your staff and you're feeling competent and you've got your non-tenured and your tenured and you've got departments that kind of vie for electives and you've got these built-in competitions already. And now you're actually taking it one step further and say, hey, you're the master teacher, or hey, you're the... regular teacher. I don't know. I don't see the value in it. You can already get nationally board certified. There's other things you can do. You can get a master's degree, a BA plus 30, but to now label them, I think you're creating an atmosphere in the schools that's detrimental to the well-being, the morale of the staff and our teachers in our schools right now.
Senator Michelle, and then we'll hear from two testifiers. Senator Michelle,
I guess I'd ask either Senator Scogin as the emissary or Senator Dahl. You know, I mean, I think we could not have had a more complete discussion than we had this morning. It was a good discussion. So... I guess if you could explain to me what is new here, how this, and I think more critically for me, are you presenting this as a compromise? Is this something that's a work product of several of the different groups getting together? I would yield to Ms. Olschwager.
Ms. Olschwager?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Olschwager, Education Minnesota. I believe that Senator Dahl is correct when he made a statement about needs thorough debate. It's 9:30, 2 weeks before the end of the session. I don't believe, I think that some of these provisions that we're talking about were in one hearing, one day in the Senate, when I don't believe that education organizations had the opportunity to testify. I think the licensure should be, would be one that is worthy of at least a full hearing all by itself. I believe that the evaluation would be worthy of a hearing all by itself. This affects teachers statewide. It is a statewide mandate on how to license teachers, on how to evaluate teachers. Teachers are put into an initial license. They have to be there at least 3 years, but we don't know how many years. Were you aware that they could be there for more than 3 years? And how? Can you explain? How does a teacher move from initial license to a standard license? If you, as a senator, cannot tell us how does a teacher move from initial to standard, then do you know enough about this language? Or are you going to take somebody's word for it and say, yeah, I'm going to pass this because somebody put it in front of me and it's supposed to be education reform? If you cannot identify it, how can you support it? We believe that there are some provisions related to about layoffs for initial teachers. If you have an initial license, and you may have been there 3 years, but someone has a waiver and is because they couldn't find a chemistry teacher and they're on a waiver, they actually would have rights to a job before a teacher who has been there 3 years. Were you aware of that? There are a lot of questions. In the evaluation portion of it, so it's a little all over here, please. Forgive me here. What about the cost? How is the MDE going to pay for this new evaluation system? How are the school districts going to pay for it? We are going to have on line 64.6 periodically trained evaluation teams. Where are we going to pay for that? Who are they going to be? On line 64.15, they'll apply ratings to teachers annually. What do they look like? 64.17, what is highly effective? And you would get a rating of 5. What do you think qualifies for a rating of 5? And I don't see a rating of 4 on here, but maybe I missed that. And then you are effective and get a rating of 3, needs improvement. There are a lot of definitions that we don't understand. I don't think there's a lot of criteria given to the department or for the rulemaking. So we believe that there is a lot of unknowns in here and could be a number of unintended consequences. And again, I will state in summary, it's 9:30, one of the last weeks of the session. We should have a full hearing on each of these topics with lots of debate. And I do not think that individuals in this room thoroughly understand what the implications are of this. So we would urge you to support the Scogin Amendment.
Senator Saltzman, a question to the testifier.
Well, you know, I do appreciate all these questions, Mr. Chair, and having worked on a charter school bill, I know that we had hearings, but the work that improved that bill was done in between because people came to the table when they thought maybe we were serious about this. And we started working on a really, really good bill. And I know there are still some people who have questions about it, but no one can really say they didn't have a chance to come and work, and we listened, and we listened, and we hammered things out. And I really don't know how to evaluate if we have effective teachers now. I mean, how do I know that when my children were in school that a teacher was effective or that there was any effort put into helping that teacher improve. So I think that this is a really good first step, and it is 9:30 at night, but we have time here as this bill continues to move forward, and if this bill is in a conference committee, that if people really want to address this issue and find a way for us to be able to, again, I think that this bill, we tend to look at this as we are penalizing teachers. This is a massive investment in a profession to say, we want to raise the standard. We want every teacher to be the best that they can. And that includes evaluations. That includes improvement plans. That includes all of that. And that's what's in this bill. And we seem to start looking at what's wrong with this bill instead of what's right with it. So I think that for us to completely gut this out of the bill at this point in time is saying that we aren't willing to have that discussion and at least continue it.
Mr. Aronson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and the Secondary Principals Associations, and we're in this amendment. We're in Section 6, and then we're in part of Section 23 as well. And Section 23 is a pretty major provision in this. I think it occupies, it looks like, 7 full pages of new language here. And a couple things. This bill has very powerful friends, and it has in it authors that are longstanding, trusted friends of K-12 that we've relied on a lot and the committee's relied on. And I think the testimony through the day has demonstrated that there's some interesting bedfellows that it creates, and several of the issues have been brought forward to you. Frankly, I represent 1,700 school principals. I can tell you that the couple of phrases that you used tonight ring true with those people. Senator Olson's comment about bullying by the federal government. Principals feel that right now. That turnaround school model in those small schools that say the principal has to be sacrificed, you know, or removed or whatever that means, they feel that. The need for buy-in, that phrase came out as well. To the extent that we're going to create a four-tier licensure, and what the principals tell me is there's no research anywhere to support having a four-tier licensure, that that's in any way connected to what principals are doing in schools, as that connects to supervising teachers, to improving the classroom. That the appraisal system that's here, that frankly, I think Senator Dahl appropriately points out, attaches some pejorative labels to professionals. And folks that may be very, very good working in challenging schools that we continue to find the answers for, that we would attach labels to them that would be discouraging, to drive them out of the profession, and frankly, inconsistent with what you often say here, that you want to do things to support principals and support teachers in the mission to educate kids. This is a very difficult process, we've seen today where this goes, and we want to work positively. And like I said, we have a lot of confidence with Senator Stumpf. I mean, we have a longstanding relationship with him, and the same is true with the commissioner. But we don't have buy-in on this, and we think this amendment, frankly, should have to make its case that it's going to do some good things before it has the presumptive position in a bill with very strong authors, Mr. Chair. We support the amendment.
Senator Bonoff, Dahl, and Rummel.
Mr. Aronson, yeah. Mr. Chair, Mr. Aronson, I appreciate your comments and can imagine how your principals, first looking at it, would have some of those reactions. When we first got the governor's proposal, which was several weeks ago, it did have this stuff in it, so it isn't actually new language. And one of the things we were concerned about as we looked at it, we understood the objective behind it was to actually put some clear definition around our evaluation system. Many states, and the commissioner could speak to that more than I, already have a very clearly defined evaluation system. And so in the governor's bill, there was comments like we should have 35% tied to growth. And we thought, well, we don't even know what our tool for growth is. And we should build this rubric with, you know, highly effective, based on growth. And again, we thought, you know, we agree that it's time that we make these changes. And so we took a stab at it in the Senate, and we did it a little bit differently. We said, right now we have probationary teachers, and then tenured teachers. But we know that most of our QCOMP school districts do have master teachers, and so they actually are familiar with this three-tiered system. But we switched probationary to initial because it's a little more respectful, and I think that made sense. And so we're going from an initial to a standard, and then a master are those teachers that we have seen through using the multiple measures and go back to the task force that we all talked about. It is that task force that's actually going to be deciding how teachers, principals, and superintendents are evaluated. We aren't going to decide around this table, and it actually says in the bill that it's subject to local control and that districts will use local factors to make those decisions. And in fact, the words we got here, we got from St. Francis, from Hopkins, from St. Paul, and so we made sure to put those kinds of things in here. I don't think that we have closed the door on this. I think this, as Senator Saltzman said, is a beginning. We haven't said anything other than we're going to have this three-tiered system. We're going to create a rubric. We're going to have a task force that's going to decide actually how they're evaluated. And so, in fact, I think we've done this in a most respectful fashion, and we took out things like 35% because we didn't think that was Minnesota. And then lastly, if you look at, we are having these conversations faster than we would normally have them. But you know what? These kids, boy, they're in school, like Senator Roebling said, they don't do well for a year, and they've lost 3 years. I mean, we don't have much time, frankly. When we look at what we're up against, the thing I love about Race to the Top is we are united now as a nation. We've got 50 states all clamoring for how they're going to make sure every student achieves the highest level. And I love that conversation. So I think we're trying to put a Minnesota spin on it. We're trying to be respectful of local control, and I respect your concerns, and I want to be at the table with you deciding the best way to go forward.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I just make a comment. We are looking at what's wrong with this bill, but what I like to do is take a look at what's wrong with our education system. And if I'm looking at what's wrong with our education system, this would not be my bill. This bill is put together because we're looking at what's wrong with our application to Race to the Top. That's where this bill come from. So I, again, support the amendment.
Sir Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think part of my question was answered. As I heard Senator Bonoff explaining it to us, some of this came from some work on the governor's bill. Mm-hmm. I resonated earlier when Senator Dahl talked about policy making and the time it takes to make good policy and what's driving our policy. And as our discussion has unfolded this evening, I've become more and more concerned about what we're doing here in the amount of time that we have. And we don't have much time, and I just feel like we're caught between a rock and a hard place. And Senator Stump, did I see a letter that came from the governor that requires that we have some of this in here, or he will not sign the bill?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rummel, not that I have seen recently. I think the last letter I've seen that the governor had issued related to the Health and Human Services bill. I'm not sure. I haven't seen any letter
just
recently.
Senator Olson is suggesting that it has whether or not he will go forward with a Race to the Top application. I think I did see a letter to that effect. So I just
is a commissioner, or can we clarify that? Is this a deal breaker, this amendment, or if that's confirmed in a letter, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and members, the governor did several weeks ago articulate some things that after we looked at the winning applications and we looked at the criteria and what we had submitted the first time around, surmised that if we didn't have some bolder reform in our next application, it probably would not be worth us going forward with it. And so those would be things like creating a statewide evaluation system, looking at defining what an effective teacher is, looking at linking some of the student achievement to the teacher evaluation, those kinds of things. Also looking at strategies for turning around low-performing schools. So there were a combination of things that as we looked and analyzed the Race to the Top application that we submitted, we fell short. Alternative licensure was an area also that we fell short, and we continue to have that discussion about that. So there's several areas, and the question before you is whether you want to go forward with a Race to the Top application based on the requirements and criteria in Race to the Top. So that's before you tonight. If you want to do it, then I would suggest that you not support this amendment that's before you. If you do want to continue going forward, then I would suggest that you not support it and let us continue the discussion. Are there details that we can still work on and address some of the concerns? Yes, there are.
Okay.
And we will do that. But that's before you tonight, and I respect each and every one of your decision on this. I know that some of these things are not comfortable for you, but it is up to you to do it, and it is the criteria that we are trying to meet in the application.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Stump.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members, before you take the vote on this, you know, I think, Senator Dahl, just to kind of get back and respond to your efforts, and I think Senator Bonhoff mentioned some of it. This by far is not a, you know, obviously isn't going to be it's not a perfect document, but I think the goal in putting this together was to try to look at, in a comprehensive way, at the education system we have in the state and look at how we might improve it. Are there going to be changes in our education system? Yes. If we do nothing, you never stay in the same place. You either slide backward or you go forward. And there's a couple of things that we have to do as a legislative body. One is have adequate resources, which we don't have, but we're stuck in that area. Another one is to look at ways to enhance and improve. You could call them reforms, but I think, well, they are reforms, and that's going to occur as well. And areas where we look at evaluating, we all get evaluated. You know, all of you are going to be evaluated in November. Either you'll be here or not be here, you know, if the public wants you. Businesses are evaluated. Individuals are evaluated. Everybody's evaluating them, you know, getting evaluated. And I think what we're trying to do is to say, lay out a plan that isn't a definitive plan at this point. We're trying to look forward at working to it. One of the things that is occurring is the Bush Foundation is putting in, I think it's $40 million. And they're looking at how they can revamp the education of our teachers. And basically, in a few years, they will lay out a process that will affect every new teacher that goes through our higher education systems. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to have a tremendous impact. We're trying to tie into some of those things. We're also, I think, trying to address all of the good educational things that we have put in place over the last many years. And some of them, I wish we could have been a lot further along, such as early childhood. But that will occur when some additional resources come along. But I think to adopt the amendment would basically take a lot of what could be very helpful to our education, improving our education system in the state, out, and take away the opportunity to even work on it. So I'd oppose the amendment.
Ms. Hermanson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson. I work with the Minneapolis teachers. I have on this amendment concerns about Section 23 primarily. In particular, because of the amount of detail that's written, and you put in place a task force, and then you pretty much describe everything that has to be decided by the task force. And the components in the descriptions on page 64, 65, I don't disagree that we need to identify effective teachers if you're going to do highly effective teachers. I think that definition is something maybe the task force should be deciding as they work. I think this needs a lot of work. And let me give you two or three very specific concerns. It says in here that at a minimum, we need to use measures of student achievement, including growth, and yet we still have questions about how we do that. And to have this in law and say, but we're not quite sure how we're doing it, and we don't know if we're going to use Common Core standards, and our testing is still up in here, I think is not a wise way to go. And again, if you've got the task force in place, let's let them figure that out. The other concern I have in the district where I represent teachers, we have many teachers that have 80% turnover in their classroom. How are we going to, and some 100, I mean, literally, those kids that we start the year with are not there when we end the year. How are we going to find a growth model that works for those teachers? Another question. We have FIAD teachers, music teachers, art teachers, language teachers. What is the testing that's going to be done with those teachers? We don't have those in place. Those are two very real, practical ways, and we're not afraid of being evaluated. Minneapolis has had provisions in their contract for achievement of tenure. We could write some of this stuff for you. The final thing is, what is it going to cost to track all of this stuff, to follow a teacher, and how is that going to be paid? Right now, our teachers are so overloaded with some paperwork that they're ready to throw up their hands. And now to have another system, and we're going to have to pay people that we don't have the money for to do this tracking. These are the things that this task force needs to realistically sit down and think through how we're going to put this in place, and how we're going to pay for it, and how we're going to make sure that this teacher is really fairly being evaluated based on the kids she's actually teaching, and then how are we going to put the results of that in place. We've just agreed with our district to give them the opportunity to assign teachers to the schools that need the help. We're not afraid of doing that, but I do think that this language in particular needs a lot of work, and just from the practical reality of implementing it. And I know that our teachers and our district are going to be some of the ones most significantly impacted by this because of the students that we serve. And we want to serve them when we want to serve them well. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Hermanson. Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And first, want to thank Senator Stump and the committee for putting this bill together, for having this language, and for giving us a good shot for Race to the Top, not for the funding, but because there are many good things that we should be doing anyway. Also want to respect the concerns that you've heard from Ms. Allswiger, Ms. Hermanson, Mr. Aronson. But at the core of this is an effort to try to evaluate the effectiveness of your teachers and your principals, of your staff. You're evaluating effectiveness. We heard testimony in the House the other week that once teachers are tenured, they're rarely giving an evaluation. It doesn't happen very often. So this is just trying to set up a framework that's still very flexible to do a very fundamental function. We'd encourage you not to adopt the amendment. It's partly, we can come up with a million reasons why not to do something. But this is something that's very fundamental to moving forward, and we may not have all the answers tonight. But if we wait till we have all the answers, we'll do nothing. and I think there's a greater sense of urgency to move forward, and this is a wonderful start. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Torres, Ray.
Thank you.
Followed by Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment has deleted several provisions, and I have been very concerned about Section 23. I have read it multiple times, and I feel like I needed to hear from more people, and I very much agree with the people who have provided testimony in a sense that I am one of those members that needed to hear from experts about this particular provision. I needed to digest this language and understand how it works. And we did not do that in this committee. I didn't feel like I had enough opportunity to go over this language. And this is significant language. This is about 5 pages of new language, which is, I think, is needed. I think it's something that we need to talk about. But I just feel uncomfortable with the process. I feel uncomfortable with making a decision in a few minutes about something that makes radical changes. And hearing from experts about their concerns reinforces my concerns. And so, I do support some parts of this. I don't want to delete some of these, Section 12 and Section 9 in particular, some of the provisions for licensure that Senator Bonhoeff extensively talked about. I think I had an opportunity to talk to teachers and people in my community and my district, and I feel okay with that. But so I don't know if you want to split this amendment or you want to take it all, but I definitely have some serious concerns about Section 23, and I will support these amendments because of that provision.
Senator Roebling, then we're ready to vote, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I appreciate the work the Bush Foundation is doing to try and increase teacher effectiveness. But even though that's moving ahead, we still have about 35 years' worth of teachers in the pipeline that probably would benefit from some form of evaluation on a regular basis, not just when they're going to receive tenure, but regularly. And I don't know if this is exactly the right plan, and evaluations are scary. As Senator Stump said, we all face regular evaluations. I mean, every year when I go before my delegates at convention, I'm nervous about that because you never know what they're going to do or criticize you for. And then when we stand for election, I get nervous about that too because that's another really big evaluation for us. But people benefit from evaluations. They work harder when they know they're going to be evaluated. They take action to do what they know those other evaluators are expecting them to do because they know they're going to be held accountable. And sometimes I think in high school, the kids themselves would be the best evaluators because I know my kids would always come home and tell me, this is a lousy teacher. This is really a lousy. My kids, were pretty good students, and they wanted good teachers. And then they'd come home, and they'd be so excited. They got a teacher that they just really wanted and loved. And those kids are good evaluators themselves. But it's a little harder in the elementary school years, especially to have those kids doing any of that form of evaluation. But I don't think we should shy away from evaluations because I think they motivate people. And I don't think it's fun just to be average. I mean, in the system we have right now, everybody's the same. And so if you're really good, and I'm competitive enough that I would want the higher level, the higher tier, because I would want people to recognize my work and my effort. And so I can't imagine a group of workers who would all want to be on the same level all the time. I think, it's hard enough in the education system. It's pretty flat. There's very few that are going to go up to the next level of becoming a principal or superintendent. So what kind of career ladder do they have? This is a career ladder in some way. This is a recognition of accomplishments. And so I think a tiered system, whether it's for a principal or a superintendent, or for the teachers. I think it's something that would be welcomed by especially by the high achievers.
Okay, most of us have stated our position at least once. Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman, just if you look at Section 23, what we're asking the commissioner to set up this basically process, the process in which we would look at the different things that would relate to the licensures, to the appraisal system, the whole thing. And if you go back on page 67, that task force, which would be looking at all this, would be coming back to us, the legislative body. And so if nothing's going to happen, but in a sense, if you look at the legislature, it's very difficult for us to put this process in place. So we're asking the people who are really out there in the trenches to look at and develop this process. And I think that if you take Section 23 out of the bill, you basically have eliminated the process to create change. And I think that's I don't see the danger in allowing this to go forward, even though, you know, there's a lot of things in that section that we talk about. You're going to see that. You're going to see a report. You're going to see a recommendation. And then you can look at adopting it or not adopting it. But if you don't go ahead with it, you're not going to see any recommendations and consequently no change.
Brief comments by Senator Bonoff and Senator Hahn.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say to Ms. Hermanson that I welcome her help, and I know the commissioner would welcome your help in terms of defining the task force, and that, in fact, part of the task force work will be to define that process. So I hope that those who have spoken would be, should this stay in the bill, would become part of that process, because you are highly respected for what you bring to it.
Senator Hinn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I've been listening to this discussion very closely, and I appreciate a lot of the comments that were made by Ms. Alzweiger and Ms. Hermanson and Senator Dahl and Senator Scogin and others, and I find a lot to agree with in their critique of this. And I share a lot of that because I think that we are trying to do something here that is difficult to do, and we're trying to do it from a state level. And again, it goes back to that comment I had earlier about the makeup of the task force. It's not easy to do these things. But what I would suggest is that this is an imperfect, in my opinion, this is an imperfect way to accomplish this goal of trying to get effective evaluation done. And I think I've heard from around the table from a lot of people, they want to see an effective evaluation system. And I would just say, if we don't want to do this, the alternative, I think, is to do something that, frankly, I would prefer, but to modify the tenure structure so that you then say, well, we're going to take away that impediment to having local evaluations done. Now, if you don't want to go there, then I think this is a good first step. But if you'd say, we don't want to do that, we don't want to do the other thing, then I don't know how you get to evaluation at all. So I support this, not because I believe this is the best way to get at solving this problem. I don't. But I don't see that there's a much of an appetite to try to look at doing tenure reform here that I think is really the key to trying to get local, effective management of staff that is going to be sensitive to all the things that have been talked about. If you don't do that, and I worked for 25 years in a large corporation. I was reviewed twice a year. And not only was my compensation tied to that, but my longevity working for the company was tied to that. And I can tell you, when you get in a review where you have to go in there twice a year and talk about what you're trying to accomplish and show how close you've gotten to that, and if you didn't do so, you might. That's an effective motivator for performance improvement. So all I would say is until you can get to a position where those kinds of things can be applied in education, then maybe this is the way you have to do it. So I'm going to support this, and meaning opposing Senator Scogin's amendment, but somewhat reluctantly, because I think a lot of the critiques about this, I believe, are accurate.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I can't resist, after Senator Hahn talked about being evaluated twice a year. I taught for about 6.5 years before leaving the classroom and going on a different route, but I was evaluated once, and the assistant principal came to visit me after the end of the year and reminded me something I hadn't even thought of, that was the only female teacher in the high school that had a class of all boys. And the judgment was made of my effectiveness based on the fact that I'd never sent one to the office the entire year. So, you know, people have set different criteria. It is kind of amazing. I was just even reflecting on Senator Roebling's comments. You know, we're judged in November, and we don't always have a clue what in the world they're judging us on, because everybody's got their own evaluation tool. So I think some effort to be somewhat systematic and reflective in this. And evaluations are meant to be helpful. They're not meant to be judgmental or to try to tear down people. And I think we should never lose sight of the fact. I mean, if we don't believe that teachers are the most important part of this whole system in serving our kids, then, you know, why would we be wasting all of the time attempting to do things that hopefully will be helpful and of value to them? So I.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Scogin renews the A11. Amendment. Strong arguments have been made on both sides. Further discussion? Not all in favor. Senator Dahl?
Well, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I hope that you realize that we already have evaluations in place. We evaluate new teachers, probationary teachers, three times a year. In our school, I was evaluated twice in the last 4 or 5 years, just last fall. And schools have good evaluation systems in place. We have peer coaching. We have all kinds of ways to improve our colleagues' performances. This, as you've heard, has so many questions in terms of what are you measuring? How do you measure an effective teacher? There are so many question marks. And again, the question that Ms. Allswager asked, can you really explain what the difference is between the three tiers and how you get there? I believe we've gone too far. I believe we can work for a better evaluation systems, but this is not the answer.
On Senator Scogin's motion to delete, all in favor indicate aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. We have two amendments. Senator Dahl.
The A13 amendment.
The A13 amendment will be distributed. Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, the A13 amendment takes us to page 56.
Being distributed, please proceed.
And as you can see in the amendment to page 56, we delete lines 27 to 31. And then it moves to page 61. And actually, Mr. Chair, there's a slight, it should read lines 20 to 36 instead of 30 to 36 on the amendment.
Okay. That'll be noted. 1.4 on the amendment, delete lines 20 to 36.
Mr. Chair, we had a little bit of discussion on this when this first came out, and you know, as we've been talking about teacher quality and teacher quality and more teacher quality, this one actually would allow a school board or superintendent and principal with the school board to offer a continuing contract to a probationary teacher at any time prior to the 3-year probationary teacher. Now, again, and I think I mentioned this before, having served on member rights for many years, I want due diligence in making sure that our school boards, our principals, our superintendents are properly evaluating our new teachers, giving them the help they need, and making sure that they indeed are the person that we are going to keep around after 3 years. I'm not sure that after 1 year we have all the information we need. And believe me, we're talking about tenure and getting rid of tenure, but, you know, I think it's a lot easier to do our due diligence in these first 3 years, making sure that that we are positive that we have good quality people in the profession rather than trying to document and use the due process methods to get them out later. So basically, yeah, I'll stand for questions.
Senator Dahl, just one technical item. 1.3 on your amendment, I believe it, council suggests delete lines 17 to 31. And it's just for consistency, so we treat cities of the first class the same as the others. So those two changes will be incorporated with the amendment that's before us. Senator Stumpf, response. I believe Senator Bonoff actually sponsored legislation. We could yield to her as well.
You know, Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, I don't feel strongly about this. If you recall the discussion in the committee, we were trying to solve a problem, and actually it was some pretty smart, creative work, I thought, on the part of Ms. Yunker. The problem being that we get these wonderfully talented young teachers in our school districts, particularly I was concerned about in the case where we worked so hard to recruit teachers of color to go into these school districts where there's an imbalance and the diversity does not reflect the children in the class. And so they work really hard to bring these people in, and then things change and, this happens, that happens, and we pink slip them and they all leave. And so our teacher's going to retire, and we've gone through an economic recession, and we've lost a whole generation of new teachers. And so this was an attempt at trying to be able to give school boards some discretionary power for a young teacher who has met every criteria in all their evaluations and who the school district just really wants to keep. I think they could perhaps do it anyway, which is why I'm not married to whatever makes sense to the committee.
But Senator Boff, just to clarify, it would necessarily be a young teacher, a new teacher.
Right.
Okay.
Excuse me. Thank you. I stand corrected.
Yes. additional feedback. Senator Roebling.
And I appreciate that. And I was supportive of your bill, and I'm co-author of it. But how do we think we could do it anyway without some language like this? Because they always work from the bottom up, don't they, when they are laying off teachers? And it's always the non-tenured staff and the latest hired. And they may have been the ones who just came through the urban educator program or whatever. So how else can we do it? Does anyone know?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, somebody told me, and I don't know if the information was correct, that school boards actually do have that ability. Somebody could answer that question. That's what I was told as...
Well, if we can get a more definitive response, we'll await that. Additional comments on the amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Without that knowledge.
Well, I think we're waiting if MSBA or someone wants to respond on school board authority. Or Mr. Aronson.
Mr. Chair, we couldn't hear the question in the back. I think that's why you had the stunned look from us. If you could repeat it, I think I could give a stab at it here for you.
Well, Senator Bonoff has suggested that districts can leap over some of the non-tenured staff and the newest hires and leave them in place if they feel that is what's best for their student population, maybe. And I've never heard of that happening. They've always cut from the bottom up, and the newest hires, the most recent, are the ones that go first, and non-tenured. And so do school districts have that ability, or does it have to be negotiated in their labor contracts, or what has to happen to let that happen?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, actually, you have a pool of probationary teachers. They may be 1, 2, or 3 years of service in the district. The first initial probationary period is 3 years. So if they move to another district, if they've completed a probationary period in district number one, and they move to district number two, they serve a one-year probationary period. Okay, so if you get that basic concept, the first one is 3 years. In a school district, if we have 10 probationary teachers, three of them are in their first year, three are in their second, and four are in their third year, the district, the school board, has the discretion, if they're going to cut five of those, to cut any five that they want. That's within their discretion. The statute says that you can terminate or non-renew probationary teachers. The board may terminate or non-renew probationary teachers as they see fit. That's the critical piece about probation. I might say with the bill, when this came up before, I actually did go back and talk to some principals after it was heard and asked, would there be any time when you'd want to tenure one of these probationary teachers in that first 3 years? And the answer was no. I mean, as Senator Dahl is suggesting, they do want to do their due diligence over those 3 years before they would decide that they would make someone a permanent member of the staff. And you may have, it's hard to construe how it might happen, but you may have a circumstance that you have a probationary teacher in the third year and that you would make someone in their first year or second year a permanent member of the staff. And a lot of you have been on school boards before. I don't think you ever sat on boards and said, gee, there's a real problem here. You know, we want to tenure this individual. We want to keep them, to be sure, you know, but not necessarily tenure them. But there is a lot of discretion in that 3 years. But it also falls into play of, are we cutting social studies? Are we cutting English? Where is that cut going to happen? That impacts that as well. I hope that answers the question.
Senator Hinn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know, Mr. Aarons, if you're the right person to answer the question, and I'm just trying to clarify, is it within the power of a school board, though, if they wish to offer a contract to a probationary teacher? Isn't that within the power of the school board to do that right now? If they want to, I agree with you, they may not wish to do that, but if they wanted to say, this is a teacher we've had for 2 years, and we want to give them a continuing contract, they're able to do that, are they not, currently?
Senator Hinn, I think that the couple things you don't want to confuse here, one is you can get offered a contract, and basically, let me step this back a little bit. While boards may do this formally, in effect, the statute says if you fail to non-renew someone prior to July 1st, they're renewed into the next year. Okay, so there doesn't even have to be any formal action on probationary teachers. A lot of time there is. But there doesn't have to be any, and that person then automatically renews for another year as probationary. And, in fact, the same as tenure. At the end of the third year, if they fail to non-renew the teacher prior to July 1, that person then has a continuing contract. The concept is the first 3 years are a probationary period during which the board can non-renew as they see fit, and the statute says, and thereafter the individual shall have a continuing contract. All of this is governed by statute. And absent the intervention that Senator Bonhoff is doing here in this statute, a school board does not have the authority to give a continuing contract to someone who is in that probationary period. Nor could they negotiate with the collective bargaining unit something different than is in the statute. They couldn't, for example, negotiate with a district to make probationary periods 6 years instead of three. The statute governs these relationships. Those are individual rights that come between the teachers and the districts and are outside, apart from the placement on an unrequested leave.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Salzwager.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswager, Minnesota. I think Mr. Aronson has done an excellent job of laying those pieces out, so I won't go into those. I just would add one more comment. I do think that there are some issues that a school board might have to face should a principal decides to pick teacher A over teacher B compared to teacher C when you have different personal characteristics issues. You know, you might have some kind of discrimination type issues. Why did you give this person continuing contract over another person? So I think that one of the unintended consequences might be some lawsuits based on preferences and discrimination type issues.
Thank you. Further comments on Senator Dahl's A13 motion? And we made a couple of technical changes at 1.3. We changed 27 to 17, lines 17 to 31. And 1.4, page 61, lines 20 to 36. Senator Dahl renews his motion. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. We have one final amendment if the author wishes to present it.
Mr. Chair, in the words of Senator Hinn, I'm on a roll. I heard him say that. I have the A14 amendment.
Senator Dahl offers the A14 amendment. Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair and members, this takes us to page 78 and deletes sections 28 and 29.
Okay, and Senator Dahl, the rationale.
What do we got here? 78.
Change is that's in this section 28 says the board must not enter into an agreement which limits a district superintendent's duty to assign and reassign teachers or administrators to the schools which the teachers will teach or the administrators will administer. And then on page 79, before the start of the school year and at other times as needed, assign highly effective teachers and administrators to schools to best meet students' needs. Now, I think in terms of transfers, and that's really what this is about, I think it gives the superintendent maybe a little bit more power in terms of from a statewide level. Most of the issues regarding transfer are collectively bargained locally. And so I think Senator Hand would like this if we go back to local control and allow these groups to collectively bargain the seniority, the transfers, making sure that principals are involved in these decisions, that department heads are involved in these decisions. And there are some horror stories out there where, and I think I gave one last week, where a teacher could be assigned to a role that in order to just to drive them out of the profession. I think that I think the system that we have in place works very well, and I think this goes a step too far.
Senator Stump, would you
well,
want to?
Mr. Chairman, I think the goal that we were trying to shoot for here was when you have difficult areas and you have the education gap where you need to have highly qualified teachers. I think to allow the superintendent to, you know, to place those teachers in some of those the type of teacher that's needed in those places, I think is helpful. And I think this is something that would actually get at some of those very difficult situations and put the best teachers in those places that I'm sure the reward would be there. Obviously, that would be important. But I've also heard horror stories of, you know, the faculty having a young teacher get the toughest class because that's the kind of the test for the new teacher, or it's the result of other teachers not wanting it. So I think the flexibility that this language allows is something that would be workable and I think accepted in terms of addressing a very very large problem that we have with some of those difficult schools.
Senator Dahl, response, and then Senator Roebling.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and again, I think as we've looked at a lot of these bills that we've put forward tonight, I think I really see it as an assault on the collective bargaining system. I really worry about, you know, the local autonomy that a board has with the school teachers in making these types of decisions. And now we have wording that says the board must not enter into. I just think that, again, at the state level, we are becoming way too prescriptive in how we direct our local schools and our school districts and our boards and our teachers, how they may or may not enter into agreements and determining what's best for students and the staff and the school district. Thank
you. Senator Hand, did you want to offer a response on that earlier?
I did not. I'd be happy to respond, but I didn't have my hand up, so
Okay.
I think Senator Roebling.
Okay, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would oppose the amendment. Once again, I think what we're trying to get at is we're trying to give the administrators the ability to do what's best for kids. And that's what we are here for. And so I know that, you know, sometimes employees may not be happy with assignments. Sometimes I'm not happy when my committee assignments around here, although I love this committee. I don't want to be still 10th of midnight. But you know, you kind of get a place where it's best for the whole organization and for the students. And I think that everybody should have the ability to, you know, the district should have the ability to do that and not have a contract that bars that. We shouldn't go into it thinking that we're going to be able to bar it. No one should think that.
Senator Dahl.
I would agree that we should do, Mr. Chair, what's best for kids, but I don't see what's best for kids anywhere in the language here. And I like all the superintendents that I've had over the years. As a matter of fact, several of them have been in here testifying and one tonight. But we can't assume that the motives of the superintendent are really what's best for kids. Sometimes there are personnel issues, and I don't need to go there, but that's not what the language says. Let's do what's best for kids. I would hope that would be the basis for the decisions made about transfers, but I think the language here as put into it is too broad to make that determination.
Senator Byron.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dahl, I think the check and balance here is that the board actually does hire the superintendent and have the contract, and so if the superintendent acts in a way that ultimately isn't what's best for kids, the board will not renew that contract. I think that here all we're saying, and this isn't really collective bargaining because we're talking about the school board, but the school board, as a governing body, shouldn't enter an agreement which limits the district superintendent's duty to assign and reassign so that we make sure our CEO, so to speak, has the most complete ability to manage the operation. And I think that ultimately is a good thing and allows for flexibility. And I don't understand in what way that we're interfering with collective bargaining with regard to a relationship between a board and a superintendent and with regard to making sure we empower our superintendents to have the tools to make the best decisions.
Further comments, Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, and just to answer that, Senator Bonhoff, there are collectively bargained master agreements that do address things such as transfers from one building to the next, especially in large districts that might be 100 miles wide. Those transfers have to do possibly with seniority, maybe not, but the fact that transfers are typical master agreement type language. That's what this addresses.
Thank you.
Senator Dahl renews his A14 amendment. Any further discussion? Not all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Sorry. So much for the roll. 14 and a half hours later, are there any further amendments? Any further amendments? Senator Stumpf moves that Senate file 3189 as amended multiple times be recommended to pass and referred to the floor. Senator Stumpf, concluding remarks.
Mr. Chairman and members, I want to thank you for the opportunity to discuss a lot of very important issues and the willingness and somewhat maybe at times hesitancy about taking a little bit of risk. And I pledge that to you, the committee, that as we go forward, I definitely will be, you know, open to ideas and changes and any suggestions that you might have along the way. I appreciate all the input that you've given, and I think that our goal is to try to have the message out there that our teachers are foremost the important person in that classroom and what happens to the education system. But yet the change is not something that we should just blatantly fear. I think sometimes if we don't look at the things that are changing in our lives and make adjustments, sometimes we just get left behind. And I worry sometimes that we get in a rut and aren't making those adjustments. Definitely, this is a tough year for resources. Next year will be, or next couple years, I'm sure will be tough years too. But that doesn't mean that we can't improve our education system with all of us working together. And I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Senator Stump. He renews his motion. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, everyone. I also, again, want to thank Maren Yunker for being here. I want to also acknowledge the Association of Metro Cities for their attention here tonight. Shows a great deal of interest in the process. And also for you Twins fans, they won 4-3.
Great.
He's a jerk.
Oh.
Okay.